Support comes from Ohio University's Voinovich School of Leadership and Public Service, a proud member of Ohio University's Health Collaborative, with the Heritage College of Osteopathic Medicine and the College of Health Sciences and Professions. We are partnering with local providers and communities to improve public health. Information is available at ohio.edu/Voinovich-school.
Hello, everyone. This is Jazzed About Work, where we talk about everything that might have an impact on your career. I'm your host, Bev Jones. I write about job issues, and I'm an executive coach. And I am excited about today's conversation because I love dogs. And today's guest has built a big career by handling dogs. Our guest is Kelly Lynn Marquis. She's a top nationally known all-breed dog handler. And on top of that, she also describes herself as a canine connection life coach. She helps folks thrive by sharing lessons that she's learned by working with dogs. Kelly is also a writer, and her recent book is Behind the Scenes of Best in Show, Intimate Moments with Masters, Handlers, and Their Show Dogs. Kelly will explain what it takes to build a thriving career as a dog handler. She'll describe how it's not always easy. She'll share some of the ways dogs have taught her lessons, and she'll talk about things she has learned from dogs and how that can help her support her human clients. Kelly, thank you so much for being here today. We're going to be talking about your book, Behind the Scenes of Best in Show, but first I want to hear about you, and I want to hear about your career path. So welcome, and please tell us a little bit about how you became a dog handler.
Love to. Well, when I was younger, my parents had dogs, and they had actually would hire professional handlers to show dogs. When I happened to be at these dog shows, I just started playing around with it myself. I always loved being with dogs. They were my favorite place to be. And so when my parents were at dog shows, I just took it upon myself to start practicing what I was watching other people doing in the ring. And so as a kid, it was very much a hobby. And I probably started around 8 years of age. And then AKC has a competition called Junior Showmanship, in which children between the ages of 10 and 17 are able to compete their handling abilities against another child's handling abilities. So I participated in that until I was 17. And also during that time, I was a competitive athlete in high school. So I always had a very competitive mindset. And I showed dogs, again, as a hobby, and went to college with the idea of being a quotation professional. I like the idea of wearing a business suit and looking all fancy and smart. And I did end up graduating with a bachelor's degree, and I worked in public relations and marketing for many years while I was also showing dogs on the side, because that was my happy place. And then as it turned out, after I got out of junior showmanship, and I had people that wanted to hire me to show dogs. So gradually, this side business started where I was also getting paid to show for clients. And it got to a point where I was making more money showing dogs than I was in my professional career. And so I made the transition to go full-time into professional handling.
I love it when people find a side gig because they have a passion about it. And they think of it that way for a long time, and all of a sudden they realize, wow, this is my real career. It's kind of amazing when that happens, isn't it?
It is, and I also find it so fascinating when I tell my story, because it seems so obvious that that's the direction I would have gone in, because it working with animals and being competitive was my happy place. That was my joy. That's what I enjoyed doing. And although I saw other professionals, in that career, I never thought of myself as becoming a professional handler someday. I just, for whatever reason, you know, you're going to get an education and you're going to use your education and that's the career you're going to pursue. And, you know, it was at some point in my 20s where I'm like, I'm not enjoying this time in the office and I love this other thing. And it is, I find it somewhat laughable because it seems so obvious in hindsight.
Well, I want to hear more about your career in a minute, but first let me stop and ask you some questions that I think might be questions that some of our listeners might have. I'm a dog person, not in a professional way at all, but I have for many years always had dogs, often three. Now, at the moment, we just have one. But I've done lots of obedience training and rally lessons. And, you know, I've taken, with all my dogs, I've taken them to classes and things just because I love it. And I know that the dogs love it. It's a way for them to take care of their energy and to grow. And I really also love dogs that, you know, very well behaved and know how to have a lot of fun. But the kind of lessons I've been to, and sometimes I've watched, I've never competed, but I've watched friends and rally and obedience trials and things like that. That is very different from dog shows and show dogs and dogs handling. I don't really have a sense of what handling entails because it's not training. It's not competing in obedience. What makes a dog a show dog? How, I've only seen a few of these things on television. How many dog shows are there? And what is it that you do as a handler?
Well, first of all, I'm going to start with the concept that what I do actually is a form of obedience. I'm teaching, training a dog how to perform and how to project itself in the show ring. And there are a lot of components to my job, but ultimately that's my number one priority, is teaching dogs how to perform and how to project their energy. And if you think of, like, you know, say beauty is in the eye of the beholder. So essentially a dog show is based on conformation and how a dog's physical attributes meet up with the breed standard. And so every breed has a breed standard that says, physically, these are the attributes that we are looking for in this breed. You know, for instance, Dobermans, they're going to want them to be of balanced proportions, athletic, agile. So physically, those are some of the components of being a Doberman. Then there's also a mental component. You have to act like a Doberman. So which would mean alert, watchful, obedient, willing to please. So it's my job as a handler to accentuate the dog's physical components, being able to make the top line look a certain way. That's their back. So structurally, there are ways that I'm wanting to teach my dogs how to stand physically. And then there's the mental energetic component of it, where as I build my dog's confidence, this is a dog show, and there is a judge that is judging the best of those dogs. And, you know, I believe we're all drawn to, you know, confidence and this energy that emanates. So I will build that in my dogs to help them perform, project their energy confidently, and then go through the necessary steps that a judge is going to ask the handler to execute in order for the judge to evaluate that dog.
The sense that I get from your book, and also from the classic old movie, Best in Show, is that this is surprisingly competitive. This, I don't know if you call it a hobby or whatever it is for the owners, but this is kind of a big time business in addition to being something that people do just out of their love for dogs. Is it Is it really as competitive as that old movie would show? Are people really willing to spend lots of resources and go way out of their way on the weekend to excel in these shows?
Well, absolutely. People are willing to spend a lot of resources, just as, you know, parents spend a lot of resources with their kids in AAU sports programs. So there's a certain amount of joy that can come in watching your animal, enjoy itself in the show ring. So there is that aspect of it where the owners enjoy watching their dogs perform, and they oftentimes will hire a handler so that that handler can get the best performance out of that dog. In regards to your question about how competitive it can be, you can compete at various levels within the sport. So you can be someone that does a show here, a show there, you enjoy the process, you're very relaxed about it, or you can choose to do a national campaign, which is a very different mindset with very different goals than, say, a person that just wants to get a championship on their dog. You know, getting a championship on your dog can be, sometimes it doesn't take a lot of resources, but when you choose to do a national campaign, now you have an owner that's engaged, a handler that's engaged, that they all want this same goal, and that's to get, they want number one. So that it can just be participated at different levels, and Best in Show was demonstrating what happens on a national level. And it can get very crazy. People can lose perspective with anything when you're throwing yourself all in on something. So it is something that we as handlers and even owners, you know, try to manage our expectations and the energy that we're bringing into it, and that we're enjoying ourselves and we're not getting so caught up in wanting that win that we're not having fun.
Yeah, I think that's true with certain sports and other competitive activities, that it's so easy to start treating this like a job, like your first job, like the job where you have to win or else you're a loser. And really, the wonderful thing, I think, one wonderful thing about working with dogs is that it is so fun, because dogs are so interesting and complicated. And by working with a dog, you start to understand things that you never do if you just, you know, have a dog who maybe cuddles and is sweet, but isn't in that learning process. Now, I want to tell just a little story about myself, because it's why when I read about your book, I thought, oh, I want to talk to her. So I was a lawyer. I had various careers that were highly competitive, and I wanted to do some things that were more sort of people-focused. And I thought that perhaps coaching would be really my thing, because I always liked that kind of leadership. But at the same time, I had enough time in my life to start going into coaching. I started getting really interested in learning more about how to work with dogs in terms of challenges like rally, where you go through all kinds of different sort of, I don't know what to call it, steps and circles and backs and forths and all kinds of things. It looks like, if you don't know about rally, people are going around fields and following cues, and the dogs have to be with them. And it's really kind of fun, and it's kind of funny because it's not overly important looking. But anyway, I went to my first dog training camp, run by a really wonderful leader, Jack Volhart, who was just at that time a major obedience judge in the country and a wonderful guy. So here was my first training with a really important, smart trainer. And we're doing an exercise in which my dog, Lindy, had to sit by me, pause a little bit. Then I would walk 50 feet away, I think it was, and turn around. And I would just pause and wait. And she'd have to sit there without moving. And then I'd say, Lindy, come. And Lindy would run to me and stop and sit in front of me and look at me with great pride. That's how it was supposed to be. And that's how it was when I practiced at home. But when I did it in front of Jack Volhard, I said, Lindy, come. And she looked up, she looked around, she wouldn't make eye contact, she wouldn't move. And I said, Lindy, come. And she just was clearly not going to pay any attention to me. And so Jack walked out to where I was standing, and I was thinking, oh, this is so embarrassing. And he was so kind. He said, Bev, the reason that Lindy isn't coming to you is she knows you're frustrated here. You're feeling anxious. She's kind of an anxious dog. She doesn't want to go to somebody who's anxious and frustrated. She feels like you don't really want her there. You've got to let her know that you really want her to come. So he went off, and I noticed that, you know, I had testified all over the place as a lawyer, but here I was kind of terrified training a dog in front of Jack. And so I just sort of paused. And in my head, I said, I'm sorry, Lindy. I really love you, and we're just here to have fun. This was all in my head. And then I said, Lindy, come. And she ran to me with this big smile. She was perfect. And what I learned was that for me, and from then on, dog training and exercises like rally and obedience trials, it's all about maintaining your inner self in a calm place so that you're open to interact with dogs. And I learned this when I was starting to coach. And I realized, oh my gosh, that's what this coaching training is all about. The kind of thinking I had to do as a lawyer was irrelevant here. It all began inside. So is that what you are talking about when you talk about some of the things that you can learn from dogs and things that help you work with people?
I love your story, Bev. I really do. And it's what actually inspired me to want to go into coaching is because I learned so much about energy working with dogs. And then I really wanted to share how we can carry those dynamics into our relationships with people. And so we can practice checking in on our energy with our dogs. I happen to specialize in working dogs. I enjoy dogs that like to work, and I like to work. And I think one of the things that we can all relate to is that sense of companionship that we have with a dog. And that's one of the things I love about my job is that we, the dog and I and the owner, we have a common goal. And so I need to be very clear on where I'm at, where I am feeling, because dogs are nonverbal. So they're sensing energy. That's how they communicate with you. So you need to be very clear on what you're communicating to them. And then you need to be able to read what's going on with them so that you can show up with them with where they're at. You can meet them where they're at. So we have, if I'm working with a shy or insecure dog, you know, I have to check in with my energy. I can be a very confident, assertive person. And if a dog is feeling, you know, insecure and uncomfortable, I'll make myself smaller. I'll do little encouraging things. I'll set very small goals so that they can be rewarded and we have something to build on. So as a professional handler, every time I interact with a dog, I am first reading, where is that dog at? What's their level of receptivity? And how do I need to show up for that dog? And so we can all understand the example that you gave was beautiful. The instructor pointed out, you know, Bev, you know, I think you're a little nervous here, relaxed at home, but here a little nervous. She's picking up on that. So you changed your energy. You said, I apologize. So in that case, I love how you apologize to your dog because it could be looked at as the dog did something wrong, but you were able to acknowledge, wait a minute, the dog knows this, but my energy is different. So let me step back and say to my dog, you know, oh, I apologize. Let us start over. And then now your dog was more receptive to the instructions that you wanted to give the dog.
That's exactly right. And for me, it was so helpful when I was first coaching. I coach a lot of lawyers who tend to be uptight, tense people too. Trying to model kind of a calm, centered energy it really kind of helped me being open to coaching and being able to help put people at ease quickly and all of those kind of things. So I do think learning to work with dogs is a great way for coaches to kind of build their areas of self-awareness and self-control and those kind of things. But you've gone a step further than I have. At least what I read in the book, I think, is that your coaching business is called Canine Connection Life Coach. And what you explicitly do is help people, help your clients thrive by you sharing some of the lessons that you learned working with dogs. So when you're working with a client, how do you describe what Canine Connection is? What kind of life coach is Canine Connection?
Well, it's about understanding our energy and how we connect into our dogs. And people love their dogs, and then they get so frustrated because the people in their lives can't show up like their dogs.
Uh-huh.
So we all want that unconditional love, companionship, sense of connection that we can feel with our dogs. But then when it comes to people, there can be this disconnect. So if you can start to work with, say, your innocent dog and starting to see how your energy impacts your dog, then you can start to see how you can take some of those things into your interactions with people. And so the more centered we can be, the better our lives are, because we're able to just navigate the peaks and the valleys because we're able to maintain our center. So with a dog, we can meet the dog where it's at. And as we can practice that in a very safe way with our animals, we can then take some of those lessons and start practicing it with people. And we know people can be more hurtful, they're messier, they're more complicated. But if we can really tune into ourselves, it's empowering, because then we're no longer a victim of how a person is reacting to us. We learn the importance of maintaining our center and perhaps seeing some of the challenges that we're bringing into that situation. You know, so for instance, if I'm working with a dog that, one of the things that I love is talking about children. When you have kids that have this great connection with animals, but they're not very confident, they're very self-contained, a little insecure, but you can see how energetically they just connect into an animal. Well, I end up working with those kids where they're working with a dog, but they want more results in the ring. And then I teach those kids how to stand more confidently and how to project their energy more confidently. They may not have been able to do that by getting up on stage and acting in a play, but when they're connecting into their dog, they will stretch their comfort zone to be able to do that for their dog. So there are, when it comes to coaching, there can be a lot of challenges that we have in our life that we can work out or even help identify with our dogs. And one of the biggest challenges that I see is boundaries. You see a lot of people that have boundary issues, and when they're working with a dog, they're not able to be assertive and calm. And you'll see those same people that have unruly dogs that are out of control, that does tend to be a similar thing that you see in their personal lives, where they're not able to have solid boundaries for themselves, where they're not able to just calmly advocate for themselves, and they're allowing other people to run ramshod over them. So there's a lot of things that we can see, that I see when I'm watching how a person interacts with their dog, and then know that if I can get them to start applying some of these principles with their dog, that then they can take some of those same things and apply it to the people in their lives.
That makes so much sense to me. And I think as a coach of professionals of all sorts, having people manage that voice in their head, manage their degree of confidence, all of those things kind of add up to solutions to all kinds of issues. People come to coaching because they want to be a better leader of X kind of thing, or they want to have better time management. Whatever it is, it often seems to begin with having people kind of be calm and notice their way of being in life. But coaches, dog handlers, everybody can get the theory of this, and it's not always easy. We all have kind of ups and downs. And in your book, I like that you kind of explain some of the challenges that you had to go through, maybe because of your early success. You wrote that very quickly. You moved up to the top. You were like number one nationally as a dog handler after one of the big shows, and everything came and it was just wonderful and you worked like mad. And then all of a sudden, when you reached your goals, it stopped being so much fun, and you went through a period of really trying to figure out what you wanted in life. That I sometimes with my clients call it big project down. Well, I have different ways of saying, but big project burnout. That you do something, you really work, you've got the adrenaline moving, and so forth and so forth, and you get it, and it's like your whole body just kind of loses interest. Was that what happened to you? And what I really want to know is, how did you work your way out of that? Because you did. You went on to have a more interesting career than ever after that. What did you do?
Well, it was a very difficult period in my life. And I do like talking about this because I think, you know, people think that they're not expecting that. And now I've learned that this happens for, you know, many other people. And so my whole life was just so consumed with, you know, attaining this goal. And I loved working with the animals, and I love challenge, and I love working. So everything started coming together when I found my life path. And then after I achieved all that, I was young. And I thought, well, what now? My whole life was, you know, with this goalpost in mind. And now that I've achieved that so soon, you know, what does that mean? And so I had to start asking myself a lot of very deep questions. And, you know, one of them being is, you know, what was driving that? And, you know, to a certain degree, it was my own insecurities that I had about feeling not good enough. I was so driven to be able to prove to everybody else that,
yeah,
I was good enough and I was competent. And when I looked back on it, anyone that saw me show dogs knew I was talented. I was the one that didn't know that. So being able to go and achieve all of those things and then step back and go, well, what are you really wanting? And now that you've got that out of the way, you just proved to yourself when you set your mind to something, you can do it. But how about we look at maybe what we could have done differently about that? And of course, I know this saying is cliche, but they always say it's about the journey, not the destination. And because that time was just was so impactful in my life, that this whole concept of remembering the journey and not having it be about the destination, I continually remind myself when I fixate on something and I want it, I love doing the work. I love pursuing things. That feels so good to me, which also means that I tend to have a lot of challenges in my life because I do enjoy challenges. So reminding myself when those challenges come up that this is an opportunity for growth and that I enjoy this. And also wanting to bring to recognize where the dysfunction was and to be able to take my work ethic into down a healthier path. And so that led to me wanting to be able to have a deeper sense of connection with people. I was able to connect into dogs. Incredible. When I connect with a dog, we just become one. There's this unity that's so beautiful. And realizing how much connection is important to me. So that's a value of mine. So then I started trying to build a life and a career now on what things are important to me. And also being aware of the fact that if there is too much drive and you're not paying attention to what's going on around you, you can find yourself somewhat, not sure how you got where you were. So I now, because I have that strong drive, I need to remember to balance that drive out with with opportunities for inspiration and for rest so that my soul is playing an active role in what it is that I'm trying to accomplish, if that makes sense. That human ego can get so caught up in going after that outcome, and it's being able to step back and go, well, what does that outcome really represent to me? And how can I be more mindful of all of the things that are showing up for me that feel really good when I get that deep sense of a connection with a person? And being able to now help other people recognize where they can deepen their own personal connections in their life.
Kelly, I think your willingness to share your experience and to kind of go deep is part of what makes this a good book. It's like you've got two books in one. On the one hand, you profile maybe a dozen great handlers and you give a picture of the best in show world, and that's kind of fun and interesting. But I think what makes the book really helpful and wonderful to read is that your willingness to share yourself, share your soul. And so the book is called Behind the Scenes of Best in Show. And I think people might enjoy it if they've enjoyed talking about dogs and if they enjoy thinking about going through the difficult parts of their careers and coming out well on the other side. So thanks for being here today, Kelly, and good luck with your book.
Thank you, Bev. I greatly appreciate it.
Today we've been talking with Kelly Marquis about big time dog shows and dog handling. I'm your host, Beverly Jones, author of Find Your Happy at Work. Nathan Kane is our audio director. And our sponsor is the Voinovich School of Leadership and Public Service at Ohio University. Today's tip is that whether you are training your dog or negotiating with a colleague, your success may depend on how you master your emotions. Thanks for listening. And if you enjoyed today's show, please give Jazzed About Work a 5-star rating.